from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Every sport loves its unlikely story. The comeback kid, the hero from nothing, horse racing has had its share, and right now it has California Chrome, the chestnut colt with white markings all over, a $10,000 horse in a world of million-dollar hopefuls, a 77-year-old trainer with a big heart, and a chance to hold the Triple Crown, win the Triple Crown tomorrow. The first Triple Crown win, if the horse pulls it off, in 36 years. This hour on Point, the race for the Triple Crown and the California Chrome story. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you had a good look at this beautiful horse? What's your question on California Chrome and the world of horse racing? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The Preakness, you got to win the Kentucky Derby. You've got to win the Preakness to set up for the Belmont Stakes. It doesn't happen often, but it's happened this year with California Chrome. Here comes the colt in the Preakness.
California Chrome comes into the final furlong with a two-length lead. Ride on Curlin on the outside is trying to catch him. California Chrome reaching for the wire. Another 16th on the outside. Ride on Curlin can't get him. California Chrome has won the Preakness. California Chrome did it.
And you hear the whole crowd behind. We'll go to Blood Horse Magazine and a California writer who knows California Chrome well in a moment. And we will hear in this hour from legendary announcer Tom Durkin, who will be calling his last Belmont Stakes tomorrow and is hoping to call a Triple Crown. But first, with me now from Elmont, New York, at Belmont Park, is Andy Serling, the New York Racing Association's top handicapper. He advises bettors on big races, widely read, widely followed, especially in advance of tomorrow's potential Triple Crown. Andy Serling, welcome to On Point.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Everybody loves this story. How are you talking with the players, the bettors, about this race, Andy?
Well, I'm the kind of guy who likes to rain on everybody's parade.
Okay,
but actually, I totally agree with you, Tom. This is a great story, and it's a story I think that everybody's embracing, whether you're in racing or outside of racing. It's a terrific horse, as you said. It's an underdog horse. It's the kind of horse it feels like anyone could have owned, and the owners are very likable. They bred the horse. He comes from modest connections, to say the least. His trainer, terrific. Everybody involved with this horse is easy to root for. And he's a real rags-to-riches story. And, you know, normally when you have a California horse that comes east, there's always some grumbling and, you know, they're not as good as our East Coast horses. But you don't have any of that this year. You've got a lot of people really rooting for this horse. And I'm rooting for him, but I'm betting against him.
You're betting against him because why? I mean, we all love the story, but this is down and dirty time. How are you looking at it, Andy?
Right. When you're betting, you're trying to make money. I mean, if you're betting, you can't get too emotional. And you spend a lot of time at a racetrack, you get attached to horses or riders or trainers, and you root for horses. But the key with a horse like California Chrome is anytime you have a horse that's going for the Triple Crown, it gets overbet. It takes more money. Its odds are lower than its chances of winning. And that's going to have a ripple effect in that every other horse in the race, the odds will be better than they should be. And in this case, California Chrome will probably be around a 1-2 favorite, which means for every $2 you bet, you'll get back about $3.
Yeah.
And in reality, he probably should be around 6-5, where you should get about $40 to $5, somewhere in there if he wins. And so everyone's going to be an overlay. And I think he has a number of real strong rivals. The two horses that finished second to him in both the Preakness and Belmont will be back. But I also think a New York horse named Wicked Strong, who finished fourth in the Kentucky Derby, and certainly a horse that I think is popular in Boston.
Wicked Strong, of course. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, how do you do it? I mean, so there's so much enthusiasm for California Chrome that sort of in just like financial guy terms, if you can look at it going another way, there's more to win there. But what do you look at beyond just that? When you look at the horses, the jockeys, the condition, how do you size it up? What yardstick do you put up here, or yardsticks, Andy?
Well, the Belmont Stakes is a unique race. We don't run mile-and-a-half dirt races in this country. And for that reason, these horses are unlikely to ever compete at this distance again. So that's a big question. And distance is a great equalizer. Now, there's no way of knowing going in who's going to be more effective, but I think it makes California Chrome's chances less good than they would be if, say, this race were the same distance as either the Preakness or Derby. And so that makes him a little less likely to win. You have to try to be objective. And for me, with Wicked Strong, he's got three things going for him. One, his race in the Kentucky Derby, where his fourth, was better than it looks. He was never going to beat California Chrome, but he could have been the second best horse in the race, considering he had a lot of trouble in the race. Also, his trainer, Jimmy Jerkins, is doing very well in New York, has an exceptionally good record in his lifetime in New York, and that's a help for him coming back to New York. And also, his win in the prep race of the Kentucky Derby, which was at Aqueduct, our sister track, essentially, was a gigantic win and probably the second best race anyone in this field's ever run besides California Chrome. So to me, all that makes him the second likeliest winner, and that's good enough for me to bet him against California Chrome.
Size California Chrome up in just those terms. Look at as horse flesh, as horse spirit, the training package around him, context out of California. How do you see this horse?
I think he's a remarkably good horse. And what's really special about him is he's consistent at a very high level. What sort of marks the really good horses is the really good horses, the best horses, they show up with an A to A-plus effort pretty much every time they come on the racetrack. And that's what California Chrome has been doing in his last six races. Every time he runs, he shows up with an A-plus effort. And that's a real mark of consistency, and it makes you feel like you'll see it again tomorrow. And from all reports, he's training as well, if not better, for this race as he did for either Triple Crown race. So he's holding his form. Not an easy thing to do, running three races in a short period of time.
With horses, as in human athletes, is it in the head or the muscling, Andy? Where's the margin between victory and loss?
That's a very good question, and I think it's really in both. I mean, obviously, the talent can overcome a lot, a genuinely fast, talented horse. But you need a horse whose head is screwed on right, who doesn't do crazy things in races and cause himself to dispense his energy needlessly. And California Chrome seems to be that horse. He gets out of the gate very sharply in his races. He's a horse whose conditioning is probably part of the fact that mentally he's prepared for every race.
Andy Serling is handicapper for the New York Racing Association into every detail of what's going to come down tomorrow when we see if there's a Triple Crown for the first time in 36 years. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Earlier this week, Claire Novak of Blood Horse Magazine talked with the son of Art Sherman and assistant trainer of California Chrome, Alan Sherman, about California Chrome's mindset before the big race.
He's really confident in himself right now. I mean, you can see it when he goes to the track. He'll just, you know, stand out there and, you know, he'll just pose and watch all the horses go by like, yeah, I'm the man, you know. This is my track. You're just borrowing it.
I love it. We turn it right into a human athlete. Claire Novak got that from the Alan Sherman right there. She's with us right now, online features editor for Blood Horse Magazine, international weekly horse racing publication based in Lexington, Kentucky. Named, in case you're wondering, for the old term for thoroughbred, blood horse. She joins us from Elmont. Claire, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
And just outside the park in Uniondale, New York, is Bill Dwyer, sports columnist for the Los Angeles Times, former sports editor there for 25 years. He's had a close look at the life and team behind California Chrome. Bill, thank you very much for joining us.
Happy to be here, Tom.
Bill, give us the backstory on this horse, the rags-to-riches Cinderella story. This is not a million-dollar pony here.
No, it's not. It's far from it. The mom was cost the two owners, who were kind of neophyte owners, $8,000 because she wasn't well known and well bred. When they were purchasing her, talking about purchasing her, somebody in the area, one of the track workers, overheard them and remarked that these two dumbasses just can't be believed that they're going to buy this horse, and so they overheard this. Bought the broodmare and named themselves Dumbass Partners. So on the silks, you'll see a DAP with a donkey on the back.
Not so dumb, it turns out.
Not so dumb. They paid $2,000 for a stud fee, and suddenly you had this wonderful horse, California Chrome.
Claire, it's out of California. It's right there in the name. California is not what we think of when we think of the horses that win these races most often. Is it shaking the part of the world you ride out of in Kentucky to see a California horse come on so strong?
Well, I think everybody is very happy for the California breeding industry that they do have a horse to represent them in the Triple Crown and with a perfect name. I'm sure the marketers for the breeding industry couldn't have been happier.
Golden State is thrilled. California Chrome, it's right there.
That's right there in the name. And yes, he would be the first California bred to ever win the Triple Crown. And you have to think about horses who have won the Triple Crown before who were not bred in Kentucky. Few and far between, but there are a couple with very good names, such as Secretariat, who was a Virginia bred. So California Chrome, I'm sure the entire state of California is rooting for him, and being a member of the racing industry coming out of Kentucky at this point, you're just happy there's a horse running for the Triple Crown who seems to have a pretty good shot.
We've got a century or so, and in all that time, only 11 Triple Crown victories. You've got to take the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes. This would make the 12th, but it's been a long, long drought, 36 years. You heard Andy Serling saying there here, smart money may look otherwise because the odds are better, but there seems to be a lot of anticipation, Claire, that this could happen tomorrow.
It will be the first time in my lifetime, and I would like to see him make history.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about dreams of the first Triple Crown win in 36 years and the Cinderella story of the horse that could do it, California Chrome. Claire Novak is with us from Blood Horse Magazine in Elmont, New York, where the Belmont Stakes will be run tomorrow. Bill Dwyer is with us from just outside the track there. He is sports columnist for the Los Angeles Times and has the California side of this story down cold. You can join us as well. Lots of big money flying around, international money, Kentucky money, you name it, from all over the world. A much more modest affair here. Perry Martin co-owns California Chrome with Steve Coburn out of California. First racehorse they ever purchased on their own was Chrome's mother. Speaking with a KQED station there, Julia McAvoy, Perry Martin said here that he met Steve for the first time outside that horse's barn, and the story of how their group's name was born.
So we're talking, and a groom walked by and said, "You know, you guys looking to buy that horse?" And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "Anybody that buys that horse is a dumbass." So Steve looked at me, I looked at him, and I said, "Dumbass partners?" And he goes, "Sure."
How dumb? Well, this dumb. Here's California Chrome taking the Kentucky Derby.
California Chrome is pulling away! California Chrome into the final furlong! He's got a five-length lead on his competition! It is California Chrome in front! And from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second! But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
Woohoo! And there was just the first of two. Could, if it's three tomorrow, it's the Triple Crown. Claire Novak, take us real up close with California Chrome. First the physical, then we'll go to the mental, because clearly that's in here too. There is a spirit. You can see it in the video that I've seen from you and others with this horse. But just physically, what marks this horse, Claire?
Well, you can even see the development that he has progressed through when we first saw him in Kentucky before the Derby. And obviously our team has been following him very closely as he proceeds along the Triple Crown Trail. He's just gotten bigger, stronger, more muscled out. He tends to fluctuate a little in weight, you know, run a hard race and maybe drop a few pounds, but he's held his weight very good throughout the whole trail. He is just a very impressive physical specimen and extremely intelligent horse. I mean, if you're around horses, I ride horses. I spend a lot of time around them covering racing. You can see a horse's presence, the way he checks out his surroundings. He doesn't get scared by unusual things that happen, but he's very alert. He's always looking to see what's going on. This morning when he schooled in the paddock and went out through the tunnel to the track, they blocked off the paddock so he could have that private time to just walk around in there and get used to his surroundings, which he has done already here at Belmont one other time. And then when he walked out onto the track, there was this whole scrum of reporters, videographers, photographers, fans, and everybody super close to him. They were trying to keep them back, but he's like a superstar in racing. You know, everybody wants to get up close and take his picture, and the horse never turned a hair. And that leads right into what you said about the mental aspect, being able to handle and actually being able to enjoy the Triple Crown chaos that goes on around him. And when he hears those photographers, when he hears that shutter click, he perks his head up, he pricks his ears, and he kind of seems to know a little bit about what's going on. They call him a ham.
A ham. That's wild. The trainer, Art Sherman, 77 years old. There's a story around him as well. He was talking here with TVG this week about how he's kept California Chrome in shape, not overdoing it during the last week of pretty intense races and sometimes training.
Well, we let the horse dictate how he feels, and you know, he doesn't eat a whole lot. You know, I've never run a horse three times in 5 weeks since I've been training horses, so this is an all-new experience for me. I just think that you need a fresh horse and have him feeling good. You know, fitness-wise, if he isn't fit now, he'll never be fit. You know, that's the way I feel.
Art Sherman, 77-year-old trainer of California Croom. There's a laid-back quality. You can hear it right there, Bill, and everybody I've seen around this horse. Tell us the Art Sherman story. He's been in the business a long, long time, and here at 77, his shot at the biggest of big times.
Well, the age is important, Tom, key to this whole thing, because Art has trained for many years. He is, as a jockey, won more than 2,000 races, and as a trainer, has won more than 2,000 races, but not the prominent big ones. He works out of a racetrack, Los Alamitos, which is pretty much a quarter horse track. It'll have some thoroughbred racing this summer, but he was not in the mainstream. He won a lot of claiming races, and so when you're 77 and suddenly the super horse comes along, you kind of look upon it as a life bonus, and he's taking it that way. Everybody who approaches him and every question that is framed as if, are you feeling the pressure? He kind of laughs and says, I've already won the Kentucky Derby. What more do I need? So he is, I think, by nature pretty laid back and friendly and enjoying this, and he has not changed at all during this process. He's enjoying it right every minute of it.
The racing world, not always laid back. There's big money here. There's a lot of pride out there. There's a dark side as well. We'll look at it. California Chrome, I'm reading here, Claire, known for certain idiosyncrasies. He only eats one brand of horse cookie, and the owners claim he won't eat any other. Curious about everything around him. Seems to enjoy posing for cameras. Some said there's a, I don't know, maybe you can tell me what this, a Fleming response for no obvious reason makes him, when he's being bathed, it looks like he's smiling.
Yes, a lot of times that happens with horses. It's one thing that they do kind of as a sensory thing, and, you know, sniffing the air and curling up their upper lips. So, yeah, sometimes for somebody who's not around horses, it does look like he's smiling, more of a just a thing that he does kind of to sense out the environment. But he is a horse that has definitely captured people's imaginations. And when you think of the fact that he's won his past six races by a combined 27 and a half lengths, that's pretty much a horse who is impressive coming into this race.
There's a lot of travel that goes into this, not to mention, of course, all the exertion of the races. But that must be wild for these horses. Did I read you were there, Claire, when the California Chrome came from the airport to race at Belmont?
I was there. Actually, we went out with our photographer, our team photographer, to go meet him at the airport. And you can't drive your own vehicle onto the tarmac, so we had to get in a horse van, rode out to the tarmac. He was there. It was his first time ever on an airplane coming from California to the Kentucky Derby. So when he got to the airport, he didn't really want to walk off that very steep ramp down to the horse van. They had to turn him around and back him down the ramp. And then in order for us to leave the tarmac, we had to ride off on a horse van, and they put us in the horse van with him. So it was my photographer, me, and the groom, Raul Rodriguez, who's an excellent, excellent horseman, and California Chrome. And he kind of looked at me like, hey, so I'm going to come in and win the Kentucky Derby. What are you going to do?
What about it?
Well, this is my first time on a horse van, but I think you're pretty good company.
Talk about up close and personal. I've read also that he has an idiosyncrasy that he won't come out of a forward unload van, that he only wants to come out backward, whatever he's riding in.
Yes, he usually does like to back out, back down the ramp or back out of the van, and that just seems to be the way he likes to do things. A lot of times horses, when you back them up, they feel safer than looking at a dangerous seeming position that they're not quite sure of. And, you know, ramps, when you get off of that vehicle and you're going down to the ground, they can be a little steep sometimes. And so usually that's what they've learned to do with him. They just turn him around, and he goes backwards quite easily. But in his races, he definitely doesn't go backwards. He seems to keep going forward.
A couple of callers, and we'll go to the great caller of the Belmont Stakes and more, Tom Durkin, legendary sportscaster, who joins us in just a second here. Anna in Harbor Springs, Michigan. Anna, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have two questions. One is, you know, we've heard the comments about how foolish other people thought they were to buy this horse. So I'm interested in knowing, what was it that they saw that made them want to buy this horse that other people didn't see?
Yep.
And the other thing is, what is the origin of this name, California Chrome?
Yeah, Anna, thanks for your call. First on the name, Claire, I mean, I've read it's because chrome is the sort of in the trade lingo for white markings on a horse, and this, of course, has all four white legs plus some, I think, on the forehead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Chrome is the kind of horse industry-wide, not only in racing but also in quarter horses. It's kind of the term for big white markings on a horse, kind of like bling or whatever. And the way this horse got his name, the owners put a bunch of names in a hat. California Chrome was one of them. And they had their waitress at their favorite restaurant pull out a name, and this was the name she pulled out. So the horse could have been named Sea Bisquick instead, and he was not, and I am very thankful for that.
Bill Dwyer, and what about this, the dam, the mom of this horse, and for that matter, the sire that they chose as well, Lucky Pulpit? I mean, it's not as though there's no sort of high lineage here. There are winners back in the family tree of these horses.
Yes, I think that Perry Martin is kind of an underrated student of horse lineage, and my understanding is that he studied this pretty hard, and they saw in the mom, Love the Chase, more than other people saw, and they looked deeper and further back and decided they'd take a chance. Plus, the price was right.
I mean, bear in mind, it wasn't California Chrome they were buying. They were buying the parents.
Buying the parents, that's right.
Put them together and you see what comes out. Bill, Claire, stand by. Tom Durkin joins us now from Elmont, New York, where the Belmont Stakes will be run tomorrow. Sportscaster, thoroughbred horse racing announcer, legend in horse racing, retiring at the end of August after 24 years as track announcer for the New York Racing Association. This will be tomorrow his last calling of the Belmont Stakes. He has been there and been there and been there. We've got a little tape of one of his most famous calls. Here he is, 2004, Belmont Stakes. Smart Jones had his chance at the Triple Crown, but the bridge Birdstone was not about to give up. Here's Tom Durkin.
Smarty Jones enters the stretch to the roar of 120,000, but Birdstone is going to make him earn it today. The whip is out on Smarty Jones. It's been 26 years. It's just one furlong away. Birdstone is an upside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes. Smarty Jones was valiant, but vanquished, finishing second. Royal Assault came on to be third, and so this Triple Crown remains vacated for 26 long years.
Today, tomorrow, it will be 10 more years with no Triple Crown winner. Tom Durkin, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Can you taste the possibility, Tom?
I've tasted seven times before, and the drink never went down.
What's the word around the track? Are people thinking this may be the year? I know you've been there before.
You know, seven times I've walked into this booth and thought that I'd walk out seeing a Triple Crown winner, so I'm 0 for 7. I'm not a real good bet that way.
You've called them and called them and called them. When you watch the track, do you know before the rest of us who's going to win? Do you have that sixth sense now as they go around? Which horse it's going to be, Tom?
You can kind of tell, you know, who's moving easily and who's not. You know, you look at the posture of the jockeys and the energy that the horses are expending. You kind of get a good idea about who's going to be able to stick around because of the fractions that come up during the race. They go too fast, too soon. You know, I kind of get an idea, but I'm never really sure until they hit that wire.
And what do you think? You must have watched the Derby, the Preakness. You must have seen California Chrome run. What do you make of this particular horse?
Well, he's the best horse. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he is the best. But he's facing some new challenges. In particular, a horse called Tonalist, who is he came out on the track, won the Peter Pan Stakes here at Belmont Park, and he just had Belmont stamped all over him. He's a big, beautifully bred, long striding horse, seems to fit the Belmont profile beautifully. You've got Wicked Strong, who won the Wood Memorial, had a little trouble in the Derby. He's back at his home track here. You've got the two fast closing horses in the Derby and the Preakness, and now they've got two more furlongs to work with. They were gaining on California Chrome at the end of the game. So it's no walkover. It is no walkover at all. And if he's gonna have that name Triple Crown attached to him, he's gonna have well deserved it.
Tom, what is it in the build or the mentality or the jockey or the training of a horse that puts them in the best position for the Belmont Stakes? A mile and a half, a long race.
Well, the thing that makes the Triple Crown so really hard to get is that you have three races in the span of 5 weeks. Now, I think it's pretty much impossible for a horse to be at his very best on all 3 days. And one of those 3 days, he's not going to be at his top. But even his second best efforts are going to have to be better than everybody else's best effort to win the Triple Crown. So you really have to be an outstanding horse. You have to be a particular kind of individual to be able to stand up to these long races in this very short period of time.
11 winners of the Triple Crown since Sir Barton, the first winner in 1919. Long droughts along the way, but nothing like these 36 years that we're in the middle of right now. Affirmed last one in 1978. Seattle Slough had won the year before. Secretariat 4 years before that. I mean, there must have been a time, 11 in all those years between 19 and 78, where there was nothing like this kind of draw. People assumed Triple Crowns would come and come and come again.
Well, not really. When I was born in 1950, and Citation had won it in 1948. Now, Secretariat, I was 23 years old when Secretariat won the Triple Crown, and growing up, it was kind of thought that no horse would ever be able to do it again in the modern age. And then, bingo, bango, bongo, you've got these three legendary horses that come up in the 70s, and now this 36-year-old draw. You know, we had been so close to having Triple Crown winners here for various different reasons. It hasn't happened for the 7 times that I've been in the booth, but I see no reason why a horse can't win it. But you are going to have a little bit of luck on your side.
It'll be your last Belmont Stakes. How do you prep to call a big race like this? What goes into it, Tom?
Well, you look at a lot of videotape. I guess we don't have videotape anymore, do we?
Just look at a lot video of, period.
Digitized images of the races. It's very easy to come by now. And I've got notes, you know, I've got about 20 pages worth of notes of just stuff that might happen, stuff I might say. I just kind of jam all that into my subconscious mind. And then hopefully, when the race is on, I'll be in the moment and I'll be able to elocute those things that have been placed in my mind.
What would it mean to you to go out on a Triple Crown winner and this Belmont Stakes your last?
Well, I'm a racetrack announcer inside a fan, you know, and so it's the fan in me that really wants to see it. I'm an announcer, so I'm supposed to not be so partial to anyone in particular, certainly not to root for anyone. But I'm like everybody else. I'm waiting 36 years for this, and I've got the best seat in the house, and I hope I get a pretty good look.
Tom Durkin
wins the Triple Crown.
Hey, legendary sportscaster, thoroughbred horse racing announcer Tom Durkin. Good luck to everybody there, Tom. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about dreams of the first Triple Crown win in 36 years and the Cinderella story of the horse that could do it, California Chrome. Claire Novak is with us from Blood Horse Magazine. She's ready to go to cover the Belmont tomorrow there in Elmont, New York. Bill Dwyer is with us from the Los Angeles Times, also out for the race. Former sports editor there, writes about sports across a big front. And, of course, that is California Chrome's home turf, California. Way back 1973, Secretariat had an awful lot of fans. The race there that those fans will never forget came in at 2 minutes, 24 seconds. Secretariat dominating Belmont by a huge margin.
He's into the stretch. Secretariat leads his field by 18 lengths. And now Price of Prince has taken second, and Mike Ballard has moved back to third. They're in the stretch. Secretariat has opened a 22-length lead. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner. Here comes Secretariat to the wire. An unbelievable, an amazing performance. He hits the finish 25 lengths in front.
25 lengths in front, it was called right there, but in fact, it turned out it was actually 31 lengths in front with Secretariat 1973. That at Belmont, that truly unbelievable. Martha in Menominee, Wisconsin. Martha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm telling you, you know, I train horses. My last name is Gallup.
Okay.
I train horses for a living. I don't train race horses. I train jumping horses. I don't care for the racing industry. I gotta be upfront with you.
Why not? Just tell us why not. Get it on the record.
Well, okay. It's a tremendous strain on a horse's system. Mm-hmm. They're 2 years old when they start training. They're three. Their bones and ligaments aren't set yet. Terribly damaging to a horse's system. However, let me say that the thoroughbred breed, I train jumping horses, and there is nothing like it. So every time I criticize the racing industry, I'm biting the hand that feeds me, because the best runners and jumpers in my business are thoroughbreds.
So will you be looking away from the TV tomorrow on the Belmont Stakes because you just don't like the racing?
No, sir. This has brought me back with a passion, this story, this horse. And you asked, you know, what is it that's got you people going? And, you know, as bad a taste in my mouth as I have about the industry, this horse himself has brought me back. I will be sipping mint juleps. I haven't put them down since he won the Derby.
Why this horse, Martha? You know horses very well. Why your enthusiasm for this one?
Well, it's just about the horse. It's about his color, his looks, his substance, his intelligence. Just the thing about how he doesn't want to come head first out of a trailer. Most of my horses are that way too. There's something that strikes a chord about it. You know, with all the money and the fame and the trophies and ribbons that goes into any kind of horse industry, for me, it all comes down to the horse. I love horses and I love this horse, and I'm going to be rooting for this horse like nobody's business.
Madam Gallup, we appreciate your call. That's just terrific. It wasn't always obvious that this would be a big winner, California Chrome. Here's Art Sherman's son, assistant trainer, Alan Sherman, remembering getting started with this horse.
When he first came in, he was a good-looking horse, a little on the smaller side. But as soon as we started working, he showed some talent. And I actually lost 500 on him the first time he ran. I bet 500 to win on him. You know,
But they by no means gave up on him. Marty in Shreve, Ohio. Marty, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and congratulate everybody. I mean, it's as much a Cinderella story, I'm thinking, for the owners and breeders of this horse as the horse itself.
Yes.
I'm a standard bred breeder here in Ohio, And it's a tough process, having to pick a stallion to breed your mares to, and then the 11-month gestation period, and then a year and a half until you get your babies to a sale.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if you are not in the elite group, I mean, you know, the stallion they picked is a great bloodline, but, you know, it wasn't going to be a big return at the sale. And a lot of times, you know, you're trying to outguess the buyers 3 years from when you're breeding your mares as to what's going to be in favor with them. And you just hope they get into good breeders' hands. And a lot of times, you know, we've kept some fillies that we've knew wouldn't do good at a sale and had them go to the racetrack to get a good mark on them to get them back in our band to have as brood mares. It's a tough game, and God bless them.
Yeah.
I'm wishing all the best for them.
You and a lot of others, Marty. Claire, it was $8,000 for the broodmare here. I think I read recently the owners have now been offered, did I read a couple of million for her since California Chrome has come on so strong? What about prices in this world? If $10,000 is a small number out on the track at Belmont tomorrow, what's a more typical number? What's a high number, Claire?
Well, you're looking at two different questions. One is regarding a stallion fee, and then you have horses that would run at auction, or that would be sold at auction.
Yep.
So let's talk about the typical price. You want to buy a racehorse. You don't want to have to breed it and wait that amount of time. You want to buy something that you're going to get closer to running on the track. You can buy a horse at a two-year-old sale, and it's very typical for a horse to go $425,000, $700,000, a couple million dollars, no question. Same thing for yearlings. You know, these bloodlines, when two horses that have that impeccable pedigree produce a horse who really is an amazing-looking horse, there are people in this industry who have the money, and they drive the market, and if they want that horse, they're going to go for it. And these are the kind of people that that amount of money doesn't matter to. In, you know, of course, a horse is an investment, but they're going to be willing to go and spend those types of dollars to try to get a horse like this. And you have stallions who stand in Kentucky, you know, with stud fees of $100,000. And then you have horses on the lower end of that. And I think one of my favorite things about the racing game is that it is such a equal playing field. Of course, there are different aspects to it. You know, you try to get the pedigree, you try to get the bloodlines, but a good horse can really genuinely come from anywhere. And that's what you see in the case of California Chrome.
Ray in Genoa City, Wisconsin. Ray, you're on the air.
You know, the first thought of the week was the relationship I see between California and Seabiscuit.
Okay.
Both two undervalued horses physically and their background, and just a horse that's unexpected. The economic terms, of course, Seabiscuits were much more pronounced with the Great Depression. The way it's sort of an everyman's horse. And I'm looking at the Triple Crown as sort of California Chrome's stakes match versus Seabiscuit's run against the war. And I'd just like to hear a little bit of comment on that. I hope you guys have a great day.
Yeah, Ray, thank you so much for your call. That's interesting. Bill Dwyer, Seabiscuit, of course, back in the 30s. Lots of economic woe and really rooting for the little guy, the little horse in that case. I don't know. America's horse is the label. Of course, those kinds of labels get thrown around easily, but it's grown on this horse, and there are really enthusiastic California Chrome supporters. So, I mean, I think it was Kentucky Derby, or was it Preakness? Somebody came out dressed all in tinfoil. They rush into the toward the winner's circle there. Is there a wider cultural context that gets played out even on the horse track, Bill?
Tom, I don't think it's anywhere near the Seabiscuit time, because that was a Depression time, and we're not in a Depression time.
Yep.
Now. I just think that it's an attractive horse, and the story of something that hasn't been achieved for 36 years captures our imagination. It's like when the Ryder Cup in golf, we didn't care much about the Ryder Cup in golf until Europe won it. Mm-hmm. Then we got excited. Then we got nationalistic about it, and now the Ryder Cup's a big story. Well, the same here. If you don't have something for 36 years, you want to see it in your lifetime. Like Claire mentioned before, she's never seen one in her lifetime, and I think it's just a good story. I don't think there's as much sociological line to this as there was with Seabiscuit. I think it's just a good story.
And some plain-spoken telling of it, which is just nice to hear. This, Alan Sherman, son of Art Sherman, the trainer, Art's the assistant, talking with Claire at Bloodhorse Magazine about California Chrome coming into his own.
In his two-year-old races, he had some bad luck. You know, nobody's fault. It's just stuff that happens. But when he turned three, he turned into a different animal. I mean, he grew into a man. Now he's just filled out. And he's strong. He's not a very tall horse, but, man, he is strong. He's a strong horse.
Claire, tell us more. You had some wonderful pictures around of the farrier putting the shoe horses on here. It's a special kind of shoe horse arrangement with some rubber wedge in there or something that California Chrome uses?
Yeah, he actually wears glue-on shoes, but they're not glued on. They're actually nailed on. It's just a modification. It helps him keep his heels a little bit higher off the ground just to support his heel growth and help his bottoms of his soles not to get worn down. His farrier came up with that idea. So they are a little bit different than what the everyday horse would wear. But going back to what you were saying about Alan, who's the assistant trainer, now this is a guy who's been on the road with this horse for 6 weeks now. Since before the Kentucky Derby, he left California, went to Churchill Downs with him, won the Derby, went straight from Churchill in Louisville up to Baltimore, Maryland for the Preakness, went straight from the Preakness here to New York.
And who knew? Only had two shirts along, I think he said to you. Had to
he
hit
said
a laundromat.
He had to go shopping, yeah. 2 days ago, his grandson Logan was born back in California.
Wow.
So he can't wait to get home for that, and hopefully he's bringing home the trophy. But, you know, the team around this horse, the care that they take of this horse, the focus that they put on the horse, how it's not about them and how great they are, and they're just really enjoying the ride with a horse of a lifetime, and the respect that they show to him as an athlete and an individual, and like I said, the care that he is given, it is really, really nice to see, and just adds to yet another reason why you would want to root for this horse, you know, in addition to some of the others here in the race on Saturday.
Things I didn't know, I'm reading here that because all four legs are white, California's Chrome's hooves are white as well, and white hooves are said to be softer than darker colored hooves and more prone to developing problems. Maybe that's part of the reason for the horseshoes. What about the famous nasal strip? Is that a big deal? Why was that suddenly everybody's joking about snore strips and nasal strips in California Chrome? But as I understand, there are different rules in different states, and it just came up because New York, there was some ambiguity.
That's right. So this horse is based in California, and in California, there's no problem with wearing the nasal strip. It's viewed as just another piece of equipment that a horse would wear, like a bit, a bridle, a saddle, etc. In Kentucky, the rule is the same way. When you get up to New York, it was viewed as a special piece of equipment. And when you have a special piece of equipment that your horse runs in that might be different from what he would wear on a normal basis, you have to get permission of the stewards in order to wear it. So that was where the whole uproar came with the nasal strip. You know, would he be able to wear it? Because he's worn it in his past six races. And obviously, you know, when you've got a horse that's doing good, you don't want to change anything. That nasal strip, basically what it does, it's like a breathe right strip for humans. Mm-hmm. It helps to open the horse's airways because when a racehorse runs, the only place that they breathe out of is their nose. So it's not like he can open his mouth and inhale air. All of that air is coming in and out of his nose, and this is a tool that helps to keep those passageways open when he's racing. Now, what happened was they applied for permission to wear the strip. They were granted it, and the stewards here in New York said, you know, it's okay in California. It's okay in Kentucky. We're going to make it okay here as well. And the situation with horse racing not having a national league or governing body is why you run into differences in each state, because each state has, you know, variations on a set of rules. And you may have a couple that they're all the same in, but sometimes you have those that are different. But no worries. He gets to wear the strip. And now any horse who runs in New York can wear it as well, thanks to California Chrome.
Joe in Daytona Beach, Florida. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. My question is, does it appear to the experts that California Chrome runs his race and he's so good that he just hadn't caught him yet? Or does he have a sense, he seems to have a sense of timing. He knows the fractions he's in and just knows what to do to win that particular race at that time.
That's a great question. Bill, is it the jockey, Victor Espinoza, who decides the speed at different portions of the race? Do they just give California Chrome, other racing horses, their head at a certain point? How's it work?
The jockey really has a sense of that, Tom. Victor's a veteran, and this is often called a jockey's race. You have to be very patient in a mile and a half. You have to position the horse well, but it's not a traffic jam like the Kentucky Derby where you have 20 starters. So you can take a little more time and position your horse. And Victor has, like all good jockeys, kind of a clock in his head, and he will know what the right pace is. In the Preakness, they kept taking runs at him a little earlier than normal, so he just, I thought it was very impressive and very telling that he just started a little bit earlier, and nobody still caught California Chrome. So it's the horse is controlled by the jockey in that regard, and sometimes horses just get away and get out in front to the point where the jockey can't hold on, but and they put up unreasonable fractions, but normally the jockey will have a good hold of the horse and we'll have a feel for what the right pace is, and Victor Espinosa is very, very good at this, and he'll be just fine.
Hey, Claire, you
Yes. Tom, I would just add to that, because I've been covering this horse since back at the end of last year when he started his winning streak, and he's won by so many impressive margins. You know, every time he went 6 1/4 lengths, 5 1/2 lengths, et cetera, et cetera. The only real question that I have, having tracked this horse the entire year and looking at this race, in every race he wins, you know, almost geared down to the wire. He hasn't really had a horse be able to get there to look him in the eye and have to lay it down on the line in a dogfight and really duke it out with another horse coming down the wire. And I asked Victor, have you ever had to ask this horse for everything that he has? And he said he never has had to do that. And he doesn't know if in every race he's giving everything he's got already or if it's just like an easy gallop for him. And, you know, if he did have another horse run up alongside him, would he just dig in and hold them off? So that'll be a very interesting question for Saturday when the race is longer than, you know, he's ever run. And you've got some horses in here that may be closing down on him at the top of the stretch. You know, if a horse does get up to his side and he's got a fight in the lane, you know, does he have what it takes to hold off another contender if somebody else can get close to him?
Well, they'll be out of the gates at Belmont tomorrow. Belmont Stakes could be the first Triple Crown winner in 36 years. You've given us a lot better understanding of the world and the horse here in California Chrome. Claire Novak with Blood Horse Magazine. Wonderful to have you. Thank you so much, Claire.
Thank you.
And Bill Dwyer with the Los Angeles Times. Thank you, Bill. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks to our old On Point producer and racing fan, John Roberts, for his help on the show today. Listeners, thanks for joining us. We'll be watching. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.